personally, I think that I need to be creative in order to survive. I think that both in terms of, I think all of us need to find creative solutions to how we live, but also for my own sanity, I need to be creative. You know, that's part of surviving for me. And I think that thriving in the future specifically is also about not being your own limitation, you know, and being open to, I think people try often cling on to things because they're safe and they're comfortable and they know them and they understand them. I think that, for example, the mediums in which I work are going to be changing, and I need to embrace that and think of that as a really interesting and fun thing.
Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
Hello, everyone. I'm your other host, Carol Williams.
Hi, Stripey.
Yes, I'm wearing stripes, which last week Lerato told me reminds you of robbers.
Yes, from the McDonald's franchise. There was, because I collected all the toys.
Yeah.
I was the only child. That's why I'm collecting toys at McDonald's.
Sorry. Because you didn't have real friends?
Yeah.
They were your friends. They were real.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got you.
The characters rob the banker, I think, because he only robs banks. Yeah, and McDonald always has to like rip.
I think maybe, yeah. I mean, I'm not that much older than you.
So today we are talking about surviving and thriving creatively, but in the future. What do you think about that? Where do you see yourself? I know it's such a vague question to ask somebody where they see themselves in 10 years, but let's say, where do you see yourself next year? Like, what does that future look like for you?
Goodness. I mean, I think I'm someone who does, I am quite future focused in maybe the way that I try and cultivate a mindset, and it's not necessarily linked to like specific things. I don't know if that makes sense. I am quite goal oriented and I will work towards things, but I think I'm trying to cultivate a mindset and have always tried to cultivate a mindset that is able to like spot opportunities, able to think about and not, maybe not be scared of the future and rather like approach it in a, yeah, in a front-footed kind of way.
Like, you have a desired outcome. What is your desired outcome in everything that you're doing? You don't have to answer
it. I'm like, wow.
So when you think about the future, do you feel excited or scared? Is AI really going to steal our jobs? As a professional who values originality, how important is it to keep up with trends and what everyone is doing?
And how do you even do that when it feels like every single day there's a new trend?
I think you can tell when someone is keeping up with trends. And I'm all about longevity. I don't have a 5 to 10 year plan, but I know that I want to work with my gifts for as long as I can, as
That's
long as
such
my body
a good
is
way
still
of putting it.
Yeah, like I don't see myself retiring. A lot of people are like, "Oh, I want to retire at 60," and I'm just like,
"No,
I might have my best ideas at 60.
Exactly.
I might just be flyer than I am at 60 because you know." And that whole, I hate it when the publications do a 30 under 30 or a 40 under 40. Because I'm like, there's so many experiences.
The 70 under 70?
Right?
Yeah.
I'm following a lot of women, particularly on the socials, who are in their 50s. And my goodness, there's like a resurgence of energy. And they're so confident. And they have experience in life. They've had the kids and they've done the family thing. And now they're focusing on actually what they want to do. And so I'm looking forward. And I feel like there should be a 60 under 60.
Yes. I think what you're saying is so true. And how do you cultivate a mindset and how do you position yourself in a way where you actually see your life in that view as like a long-term thing and invest in yourself and invest in your gifts, like you say?
Yeah. And what skills are we going to need in 5 to 10 to 20 years time to stay employable or self-employable? To help us look into this crystal ball, we've invited writer and producer Karen Jens and creative director and entrepreneur Erin Lee Peterson to share their thoughts, dreams and plans. Karen, you're a scriptwriter, book author, director and producer. You've worked extensively as a writer and director for stage and screen for the likes of comedy series, The Morning After, for example, the drama series Recipes for Love and Murder. Your LinkedIn profile says head writer and producer at Both Worlds Pictures, but you also lecture and run workshops in writing and humor. Thank you so much for joining us today, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me here.
I loved Recipes for Love and Murder, but we'll get into that.
Thank you.
I can't believe it. Erin Lee, you're co-founder and creative director at Research Unit. This brand, which you run with your partner and husband, designs handcrafted and sustainable luxury apparel.
Yeah.
But you're also a journalist and a former radio presenter. In 2024, Research Unit overflowed out of its store at the V&A's very own watershed and opened an outlet in Bree Street. We're so excited to have you.
No, oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
And let me tell you something. Erin
is looking fabulous.
You look like a designer. I don't know, there's just something, the way you've structured your outfit. She's in all black. Power
always.
But there's so many different textures and lengths, and I'm just so excited to get into that journey.
I mean,
it is
layering, it's winter, so
yes.
Have to. I mean, the mesh doesn't it can't cater for this weather, so
I was wondering, but I just didn't want to ask like that. I was like, are you warm?
No, I'm very warm. I've got like super like
okay
yeah
okay
yeah,
but layers thanks. layers.
The older women in my community always used to tell us growing up that you need to suffer for your beauty.
Yes. Oh. Same. I also got that.
Do you believe
my sister used to brush my hair and it was bad. And then she used to be like, you have to suffer for beauty, and I'd be like, what has that even got to do with it? Like, you brushing my face, not my hair.
Let us kick it off with your early careers. Karen, your first qualification was a BA in English and drama. What was your first job after that? And how did you, first of all, how did you get to study that degree? Because we've noticed with our other guests that you realize your passions at a very young age, most of us. And then when you get to matric or, you know, finish high school, you venture out and start doing your passions. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I will go on record as saying I did not complete that BA. I had a child, which was not planned. And that child at 5 weeks old was on the floor in a little basket in the corner of a writing room. So, yeah, I became very passionate about theatre, about writing. Very young, when I was a kid, I made a like newsletter for my road, and
one of those
sounds familiar.
wrote about the great flood when the pipes burst, and you know all of those fascinating things. My mother was a teacher, and she directed the school plays and so on, and so I would sit on those rehearsal room floors, and you know, we were very involved and taken to things like David Cromer and a lot of protest stuff in the 80s and so on. So, yeah, I kind of always knew where I wanted to go. I think my high school guidance counselor was really annoyed with me because I had the points to get into medicine, which I was told repeatedly. And I was like, that's not for me. And so, yes, I studied English drama linguistics, which absolutely I think was probably my favorite subject and sort of the most interesting one. I did some history of arts in that as well.
And then to your first job. So now you have a baby, and obviously that throws a spanner in the works.
Yes.
What does life then look like for you?
Yes. I mean, I'd kind of been, again, while I was studying, I was doing all sorts of bits and pieces.
Yeah.
I staged a play of mine when I was 19, just because I felt like I needed to. I was working at Cafe Camisa at the time, just sadly now a laundromat.
Sorry, you are funny. I know you throw exaggerations, but I'm like, I can tell you're into comedy and you write, you know.
Well, I mean, there's been many occasions when I've been paid to be funny. So,
okay.
So sometimes it's a contractual obligation.
But I know all about that.
Yes.
By the way,
I was working with the bands at the cafe. I was booking that.
You were hustling.
And just being part of the things that I wanted to be part of. You know, I think finding creative people and surrounding yourselves with them, and that was fun and that was exciting. Yeah. And so, Yeah, as I say, there was the baby on the floor, and I was
still doing your
writing,
thing.
You know, bits and pieces, radio drama. So it all kind of followed on. There's not sort of like a clear.
I see.
First job.
Yes.
Yeah. First job. Constant.
Because
constant
there were bills
hustle.
All of a sudden that included another little human.
Absolutely.
Erin.
I'm ready for you.
You studied broadcast journalism.
Yeah.
It's not a popular degree.
No.
Or certainly wasn't back then. How did you find out about the degree? And then when you finished the degree, because it's so hard also to get into broadcast media. It's a saturated industry. Tell us about your journey.
My journey is very similar to Karen's, actually.
Mm.
At the end of matric, I had the ability, I was really good at English as well, but also I had music. So I played violin, piano. For me, it was quite an intrinsical part of who I was. The music, the producing, how things work together, how sound works together. It was quite important for me to kind of get into how that worked. I wanted to study, well, initially I wanted to do music, but I was like, is there money in that?
Yeah.
Like, it was always, not that money was, but
it's important, for
it's
independence.
Important. Yeah, like I was always this person. And I was like, I don't know if there's any money in that, unless I go and be a conductor in Austria somewhere, or play violin in Austria. So I took a little gap year, and then I decided I'm going to go and travel. But I didn't go and travel because I didn't have enough money. So I worked.
Reality hits you, bam.
Yes, I worked.
And dream, reality.
I actually started working at 14, but at a burger shop. And I kept on working all the time since I was 14.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how. Like, my sister
was
6 years older
than me. It was
legal
back then. There weren't child rights.
I looked pretty,
I was tall, so I looked pretty fine. I looked like 16, so it was okay. And my sister worked there as well, and she's 6 years older than me, so she was already 20. So she's like, oh, it's fine, we look the same, don't worry.
Yeah.
And then I kept working, and I ended up working at a shoe store, and that was my first take into retail specifically. But then I decided I'm going to travel, but then I didn't travel. So I worked in retail for a while. And then I decided the place that I worked for, there was a lot of there was a hairdresser next door, and a lot of ETV people were coming in there.
Yes.
So this was for me, I was 18 years old. I was like, maybe I should study journalism. Maybe I want to be on TV. Maybe I want to be famous. Maybe, you know, when you're 18, that's
how you make sense in the world.
Yeah, you kind of maybe that's what I should do. So I applied and I got into it. Well, initially it's just called journalism. It's never, you major afterwards.
Yes.
You kind of go into, so you do news writing, which I was awful at. I don't know, my writing skills were amazing,
but not for news.
News writing was different.
Yeah.
And then I studied a little bit, kept on working in retail. And then I got this internship through Prime Media Broadcasting, of which I hounded the editor at the time. I can't exactly remember what her name was.
Yeah.
Because I'm bad with names. Coming from a journalism point of view, I'm still bad with names, which is the reason
they
why
normally
I don't do
on the
that
teleprompter.
Anymore. Yes, exactly. Imagine. And I hunted down this editor at Prime Media Broadcasting in the newsroom. And she said, you know what? I don't really have anything for you
right now. They never have anything.
I eventually got hold of her. She said, I do have this boot camp happening. It'll happen over the weekends. It's a news boot camp. It's a whole lot of journalism students that can come in and write news. And that was the first step, the step in at the door. And I did that boot camp for 6 weeks on the weekends besides working.
Yes.
And I think, that's how I got into it. It was fun. I realized that I wasn't really good at writing it or going out into the field, but I loved reading it. I loved the expression that I could make. I loved being in front of the mic.
Yeah.
So I was like, I could do this. I was quite confident. Growing up, I was always singing in front of the mic, always, always. Yeah. I was always confident enough to stand on the stage. So I was like, I can do this. So that's what kind of brought me to that point.
Yeah, I hear you. What I'm getting, Carol.
Yes, I'm here.
From both our guests today is that once you find your passion or the creative industry that you want to go into, you have to cultivate community. You have to put yourself in spaces where other people have a common goal or are doing the same thing, not only to broaden your mind, but that's actually how you then land your first job, is by saying, hey, I want to do this. And the hounding.
Yeah.
Totally get you. I am yet to meet a creative that says, oh, I just knocked once and they said, yes,
yes,
come in.
Immediately. Yes.
They said no, you know, many times.
You have to fight for your spot. You have to fight for your spot. And talent is like 50% of what you need to like get in, but the rest is just really hounding.
Perseverance.
Yes. Yeah.
And like resilience and being rejected. And yeah.
Karen, take us through some of the main challenges now that you are a working young mother.
You know, obviously when you're faced with having a baby, there's a lot of expectations, even more so from the world, about you're going to have a regular job and a regular salary. And this would obviously be the sensible thing to do.
This is responsible. Yeah.
And there's a number of opportunities. That whole thing of chasing things when you're a young creative is going, yeah, I can be available for 6 weeks. Mm. I can do that thing. I can do that thing. And there's a lot of that I couldn't do, you know, and I couldn't say yes to. One of the things that was really important to me at that time, which I was incredibly lucky in, is when I had been at drama school, I was the one going, I'll do your lights, I'll do your sound for you. I'll be the stage manager. Yeah. And the lovely man who'd been running the theatre at GCT moved to the Baxter and gave me jobs there as a stage manager.
Nice.
Because he knew me and he knew my hustle. Like if he had just looked at me on paper, it would have not been that.
Yeah.
But he'd seen me do that. And that was quite a great job for a young mom, because when you're running a show, yeah, you're out at night, but that's, you know, the bib is slipping and then you're home a lot more during the day.
Yeah.
And what that enabled me to do is spend time around a lot of directors, a lot of actors, be in the room when they're creating, to be known again, as you're talking about creating that community, be known in those circles, be present in those spaces. But yes, I continue to hustle, to go, I'm going to create, I'm going to do, I'm going to be these things. And I think my kids throughout, and another one came along a little bit later, have always been also a great reason for me, is I kind of make a lot of decisions in my life about going, how can I justify these to my children one day? It's everything. It's like, how am I voting in this election? Yeah. How am I? And I'm making these choices because, oh, I can say to them, yeah, that year might have been a little tricky, but that's when I put on this play that was really a big deal for me and really helped me. And I have to be my best self in order to show up for you. So
my partner's grandmother used to tell them when they were younger, or rather ask them, what did you do today to justify your existence?
Oof. Wowzers.
And they all turned out to be very serious people. And so every day, you better justify, why am I here on earth? So those were the challenges. What were the joys? Now that you're in this world, you've created this community, you're working hard and you're, you know, creating, because I think it's such a privilege also to be a young creative and actually create your own work at the same time while working under somebody. What were some of the joys?
Absolutely. I mean, there's always something incredible about, you know, I work now mostly in TV because we live in a capitalist economy. But there's something about live, which is so rewarding. You know, if you actually sit in a room and people laugh at the things you say, or they come up to you afterwards and go, oh my gosh, I felt like that, or that resonates with me, I felt like that before. That's one of the most rewarding things, I think, as a human being, is to go, yeah, we created. And alongside that, I also played the violin. And,
we have like a string for you.
Yeah. Are you all from Cape Town? Maybe
in the air. You know, I sing and did a lot of art and photography. I think all those different kinds of creativity is also just such an incredible thing when life maybe is a bit tough, to have those spaces to be able to express
with
things, to feel, and to be around people where, like, it's quite fascinating as a creative person that a lot of our job is talking about how we're feeling, talking about what's happening in our lives, being quite vulnerable and honest and raw.
Continuous therapy.
Make other people listen to you.
And the last thing I'll say, which I think is incredible about being a young creative, specifically in this country, is it is such a world where people of all ages and all types of human beings work together and are respected. So you are exposed to, and you're working with, I was in rehearsal rooms with, you know, actors in their 50s and 60s, but they respect me because I'm doing a job and I'm part of this world. And people from very different cultures and backgrounds and every kind of life, you know, we're here in this thing together. And I think that's exceptional. And specifically in South Africa, you getting to meet and work with the big heroes and the big icons. Yeah. And that, you know, I did sound for Johannes Gak Oral when I was 19. Mm. And you're meeting David Cromer and Ethel Fugard and being surrounded by these people that are not up there. They're here. We're working together. Mm.
Yeah. So the Rainbow Nation did work. Do you guys remember that song? South Africa. We love you. You don't remember?
I'm a beautiful land.
No.
You did not watch TV. Were you rationed?
Or maybe you were just singing it in a way that I can't understand.
Oh!
Shade. I'm just kidding.
So, Erin, so you're working in retail. You get interested in broadcast. But now you're fully in retail. Take us through, first of all, how the idea of starting your own business came from and where you decided that, okay, fashion and clothing is my thing and I'm going to leave. Because most broadcast people, you know, are very staunch about
They stay in that trajectory.
Yeah. Yes. And so even though both of these disciplines are within the creative industry, they're also quite far, a little far apart. Mm. How do you make that pivot? Because that's important for me because I didn't know that I would not only do acting. Mm. The comedy was a surprise. And so that was a pivot I didn't expect in my creative career. So tell us about when you pivot or decide to pivot. And then how do you then come up with starting a business? Because that requires funding.
Yeah. So the business didn't start until much later in the retail spectrum. Just going slightly more back. From the Prime Media side, I didn't get a job at Prime Media. I got a job as an editorial assistant at a, it was like an employer branding company.
Okay.
And I worked in their media section, but I was still very adamant to get into broadcast.
Yeah.
So I, again, hounded the program manager at Good Up FM, SABC. And then he told me, listen, the only way you're going to be able to start is if you come in after hours and you work with another producer on a sort of behind the scenes fake board, soundboard at the back and learn how to put everything together. Mm. And I did that. And at this point, I had three jobs. Mm. So I was going after hours. I did the media thing. I was working for Next 48 Hours and I was doing weekend stuff. Okay, now that's actually four. Mm. So as time went on, I was actually doing behind the scenes stuff a lot for Good Up FM. Mm. I was doing shadowing for other DJs, you know, if they're out in an outside broadcast, who's managing the buttons on the inside. So that was what I was doing a lot of the time. I learned how to do that. I went in part-time until I kept going, like, don't you have like another on-air position where just to fill in, just to fill in. And I kept working there because like if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. So
exactly.
I kept going in when I had free time. And then I graduated and then my husband or my boyfriend at the time came back from Sweden. He had a master's course in industrial design in Sweden. And during that time, obviously I missed him a lot, but then I was like, no, I'm going to throw myself into work. So I was like working those four jobs. And then I decided I'm going to do that part time. And then when he came back, that's when I found he got me this job at Paul Smith, which was my entry into more high end retail, which I realized, this is quite cool. So I worked there 9 to 5 and then I went in to the radio station afterwards. Mm. And then I started doing this on-air stuff, like, you know, fill-ins and whatever. And then I got the breakfast show and then I moved to 2A, 2A is another high-end store, which I got offered a position. The manager came into the store and said, don't you want to work for us? And I was like, are you poaching me? And then I said, okay, cool, I'll go work there. And that was when the business started. It was not supposed to be a business. It was a side hustle thing that I just wanted to enjoy. I come from my mom, who was very like fashionista vibes. She always had like a leather shoe, leather bag. And I started working there. And I still did the radio stuff part-time. I got a breakfast show position. I was in the breakfast show.
Which is like the pinnacle in broadcast.
Yes, that's the highest point you can go.
Yes, everyone's like actually listening.
I was doing the traffic and the news on the breakfast show. Mm. And I was doing, I think the breakfast show was from six to nine. So I was obviously getting up at like just before five and then getting to the radio station. But then I didn't have anything else to do.
For the day,
So I would work at 2A, and this is like a high-end store. So they sold like Celine, Bottega Veneta, all the high-end Prada, all these high-end brands. And this is where I got bitten big time, because then I realized like my entrepreneurial side came out, because I was like, ooh, why are they making bags in Italy and wherever else? Now we hear that it wasn't actually Italy, but anyway.
Other story.
Controversy.
Yes, other story. But anyway, I was like, why are they making these in Italy and it's not coming out of South Africa? Why are we doing... And I obviously started questioning these things. And also, I learned a lot from my boss at the time. She was a really good entrepreneur. The way she was running things, the way she was offering customers a different experience, as opposed to just... retail, just like, okay, buy it, whatever. She was offering them an experience when you walked in at that store, understanding that people were buying on another level. I learned that really hard way, not to judge people when they come in at the door and want to buy something expensive, and you think they don't want to buy something expensive, you judge them.
They can't afford it.
Exactly. And that's where the whole process started. I started buying offcuts of leather. Let me start my own thing. But it wasn't about starting a business at that time. It was nothing. It was just like cutting in my parents' room on the floor, that type of thing. When I had my off days, that's what, which was hardly ever, but like you would have off days during retail.
Sure.
So I'd do the breakfast show in the morning and then work a 2 to 9 shift. That was the 2 to 9 shift. It was very, very tiring.
Yeah.
But I only realized a little bit after that, that this was back in like 2010, 2011.
The year of George.
Okay.
No, the World Cup. It was like George's.
Yes, 2010. Yes, you're right.
What?
I also got engaged in 2010 and I was like, ooh. I do not have money for a wedding right now. So that also pushed me a little bit, because I was like, my parents are not going to be able to afford
the kind of wedding you want.
Yeah. Well, it was a small wedding, but it was like, for me, it needed to be lavish, obviously.
Obviously.
So all these little factors is what pushed me to do that. And there was no funding. Girl, there was no funding.
Okay.
I didn't have funding. I had a cell phone. My husband and I made a good product. And we had Design Indaba when Design Indaba was, and this is around 2012 now.
Yeah.
We had Design Indaba, and Design Indaba is what got us to a point where he had furniture, I had leather goods. I didn't get in for leather goods. He got in for the furniture. I was like, no way, dude, I'm putting these leather goods on your table.
On your phone.
And we had about 80 orders without any credit card machine or anything like that. We never... at that point, didn't think yet that it was a business.
Yeah.
It was only when we got in at the biscuit mill and the markets and whatever, we were like, okay, this is...
maybe something is going on here.
Yes, I was still working on radio at that point. I was still doing what I was doing, freelance, radio, breakfast show, voiceovers, you know, all of the stuff. And then in 2016, that was when I decided to leave. But only because of my energy levels. I was highly strung every day, waking up super early, going to bed super late, and then just like not.
You can only do that for so long. Hey?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Your body starts to deteriorate and you can feel. So I only left radio in 2016, but only after, like, this is like when I had a factory. We won. That was where part of the funding came from. We applied for the SAB Kickstart Award in 2012, 2013, after we just got married, which we, again, were broke, after we got married. So we were like, okay, we're really struggling now. And then he decided he's going to give up his job. I was like, what? Like, why would you do that? Yeah. And he was like, because I'm going to go to Joburg and do this micro MBA course that SAB wants me to do. And we are going to win this competition. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
And then what must we do with the money? What? Where's no money?
Yeah.
And then he was like, no, we're going to win some money to buy our machines and get our business started up. And that was when the whole 2012, 2013 was when the whole business actually started. Yeah.
It's so amazing to hear these kind of stories, because what it tells me also is that when you are entering the creative industry, you need to take risks.
Yeah.
You won't propel yourself
further
away. It's
not going to be a comfortable
journey. Yes. Yeah. Certainly. Well, nothing in life is comfortable, but specifically in creativity, like, you have to take the kind of risk where someone else will look at you and go, are you crazy? Are you crazy? And you're like, actually, yes, I am. And that's why
I'm still going to make this choice.
Wow. What a story. Karen, you're also busy.
I try.
You are very busy. So you've been on the board of the International Center for Women Playwrights, and you were on the board of the Writers Guild of South Africa. What about these sorts of organizations are valuable to you?
I mean, it's so much, again, about networking and connecting. Yeah, the International Center for Women Playwrights is a really fascinating organization. I think even just sometimes as a young creative in particular, but at any point as a creative, owning something for yourself is really important. So to go, I am a playwright, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with saying those things, noting those things for themselves. You know, at what point you go, oh, I am a comedian, or, you know, some people do it too soon, but most people struggle to really claim those things for themselves. It's meant any number of things. You know, in 2010, since we've been talking about it, I was invited to go to a conference in New York. They were paying for lots of things, but not accommodation. And I contacted one of the lovely, lovely old woman playwrights. I was just asking for advice about where to stay in New York. And she said, but come stay here, you know. And it's everything from that and that sense of welcome and community to really being able to collectively work around issues and causes. So, you know, you mentioned those organizations. I was involved with the Performing Arts Network of South Africa for some time. I last year co-founded the Disabled Audiovisual Workers Network.
Yes.
I'm with the Philharmonia Choir. I think, you know, so many other careers, you maybe have a lot of colleagues, you maybe have a lot of people naturally in business with you, mentors, whatever else. In the creative industries, we often have to find our colleagues, you know, I think especially as a writer, like, that's often the loneliest career path. And so I think there's an inclination to find that. And as I say, both it benefits you to be part of a network and a lot of them are women focused. You know, I'm also with sisters working in film and television. There's definitely always been a particular space where women need to collaborate, connect and work together and be active in these spaces.
How important is it for you to keep up with trends and news and popular discourse? Because like you just said, writing is, you know, lonely, and but there are so many writers. And I've noticed on television or, you know, on streaming platforms, there'll be seasonal themes where suddenly everything you watch is about guns and murder and drugs. And then, you know, one time it will be, you know, a different subject matter. Tell us a little bit more about your process. How do you come up with the themes that you tackle in your writing?
I think that's, you know, it's really interesting. There's, you know, on the one hand, I'm going to say, yes, it's my job to watch TV, to go to the theater, to go to comedy, to read books, to listen to music, to know what's happening out there, to be as connected as I can. But I think also, as I say, particularly now working a lot in TV, you've got to try and look beyond, because the ideas I'm pitching now might be on air in like 2-3 years time. You don't want to be, which you see constantly, the cycles of.
So you're already in the future.
You have to be, because you don't want to be that copycat position. You know, we saw it. Oh, something comes out and it's different and it's fresh or unexpected, or we haven't seen it for a while, like a Bridgerton, and then there's all these people trying to make the next Bridgerton, and you know, no, you've missed that opportunity.
Find the next one.
That ship has sailed. So I think absolutely you're going to see always trends, and post-COVID, for example, people wanted things that were maybe a little softer and a little less dystopian, because we wanted to believe again that the world was a little gentler and kinder, you know? Yeah. So there was a trend that perhaps we'd seen in TV and films for a while that softened maybe a little bit. Maybe now we're going, oh, we're robust enough again, and there's war in this world and people are feeling a bit more rambunctious and fighty again. So maybe we're heading into that space. And that's also the thing is that, you know, a lot of ideas have that time. So there's ideas where you've maybe pitched them once or twice and they haven't landed. And you need to go back and go like, how about now? Because now this and now that. And yeah, you're always trying to imagine what are audiences in 2-3 years time going to want to see.
That's a good point. It's obvious if you think about how long production takes, but it's quite incredible to think about shows that really capture people's attention or capture something. And the fact that those were, you know, they feel so current in a way. But so would you say that trends stick around for like a few years maybe? Like how do you do that? Like how do you project what you think people are going to be interested in?
I think some things are certainly cyclical. I'm going to very briefly venture into Erin's space, which is not my natural territory, and say, you know, I think...
Erin is side-eyeing you.
I'm reaching with my brain into your space, so yes.
I think we've all seen, you know, that cycle that happens in fashion where something's on the runway and then you're going to see different versions of that at different layers of society or different aspects of society over time. You know, for a long time, I did write on Puppet Nation, which was current affairs, which was we would write and deliver an episode that same week because it needed to be. Even within that, there's levels of prediction you can do. We're like, oh, well, this episode's coming out on Sona, so we can write two versions of that and then go, oh, go with this one, and it can go live, and everyone's like, wow, you've predicted the future. became really very worrying in the satire space. It's harder and harder to do comedy because the real world is so wild. I wrote a piece about Tiger being a portal to hell, and it became so popular that like 6 months later they held a portal to hell party, and I'm going, I don't know if this is
Tiger in the club.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking because I'm like, I haven't heard about that in.
Yeah.
And you were like, this was not a suggestion.
Exactly. I was like, this wasn't. But, you know, there's also, I wrote a satirical piece about maybe 10 years ago, Cape Town voted best Cape Town in the world. Yeah. And that's still funny. Like that still gets circulated every couple of years, you know? So there's certain things that are just very human that are always going to be there. But I think, you can look ahead and go, okay, whatever the buzzword is, or AI stuff or environmental stuff, or there's so many things where we know we're still going to be talking about those in 2 years' time. And there's smaller things you can tweak closer to the time. But I think those sort of big questions or those big ideas.
This is all feeling like astrology to me, the cycles of the moon. And the moon is here. And now we're going here. But I totally get you. Speaking about the future and AI, Erin, there's a lot of innovation in the research unit. Firstly, tell us about that process on why the research unit is unique to any other brand. And how do you feel about the presence of AI coming into the industry? Are you positive about it? Do you work with it? Do you feel that it might, I don't know, hinder your future going forward?
No, I don't think so at all. I'm all about that technological changes. Like the schools, for example, just touching on and like schools with my kids and stuff, they're very like no anti-screen, anti-phone and whatever. But I remember as a kid, like I was yearning for technology. And I think we have to go with the times. There are certain things that you have to prohibit and certain things that you don't. It's like someone giving you advice. You take some and you don't take some. I haven't particularly worked with AI as yet, but I know that some of my designers, when they were doing their courses, they kind of
did, and it helped them quite a bit. But I don't think anybody can really understand my brain and how
a machine
that
can't and replicate your brain. That.
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. And so just touching on what Karen said, like there's so many, like the trends, and you have these trend forecast websites, which I never look at, but I do look at what's happening on the high end level in the luxury houses, the fashion shows, what's coming out and so forth. But I don't necessarily, I always think like, how can I take that dress and transform it? Like I'm always like, if someone tries to copy me, I'm always like three steps ahead. Like my brain is already three steps ahead. The nicest thing, which I was telling Carol about before, was that I don't design where I'm designing something and I want it to look a certain way. I go and I find the resources first. I don't come from a fashion design background. I didn't study that. So for me, I go a different route because I'm not used to going the normal route that everyone else takes.
Which would be, I suppose, sketching first.
I can't draw to save my life. That's like one creative ability I do not have.
So you can be in fashion and not be able to draw.
No, there we go. Yeah, like if you, no, of course. Not, like, definitely. Yeah. So I go and I go find fabric or whatever. Whatever I find, and the thing is, South Africa has very minimal resources. So when you find fabric, really good quality fabric, you can't, you don't necessarily find that fabric again. So I work, initially I thought that model wouldn't work, but it does. It's been, now becomes a limited edition product. I find this fabric, I take the whole roll, I kind of make a few pieces out of it. But I let the fabric determine what it's going to be, not the way the other way around.
So I have a question, and this episode is really around surviving and thriving creatively in the future. So I'd like to know from both of you how you think about that. What does that look like for you, surviving and thriving creatively in the future? Let's start with you, Erin. Okay, you can take some time to think about it.
I think surviving is like one thing. For me, it's like, okay, surviving is like, okay, cool. I could just, I can just about pay my rent, or I can just about like put food on the table. Thriving for me is like not having to worry about any of those things, but being able to think more creatively. Thriving is when you have that time to think creatively. Because I've noticed that when I go through financial struggle, which I've gone through, I think, most of my life, you don't think big enough because you always just focus.
You're just thinking about today.
You always just focus on like, okay, how am I going to get through this? And to a large degree, I've learned to overcome that small little hurdles, those small little challenges, because financial stress is what keeps you back in your mind. So you have to overcome that with like resetting your mind a little bit. And so thriving in, even in the future, is that you don't care about any of that. You only care about creating and making an impact on other people's lives as well as your own life. And you don't have to worry about any of that. So that for me is what thriving is. Like just being able to put out new pieces all the time, or new innovations, or transforming people's lives, transforming people's in like the industry, without worrying too much about like the little small nuances that like hold you back. So yes, that's my little two cents.
Ka-ching! That's what I heard. Thriving means ka-ching.
To me. Because success doesn't necessarily mean it's money. Doesn't mean success.
For sure.
Success is
for
being
sure.
able to keep, pick up your kids from school, for example, and living that kind of life, fulfilled life. But money does make the world go round. So if you are earning enough money, it does actually put you a little bit further in not worrying too much, because you do need to eat. You do need to eat well, and you need to be able to like live, but you have to be able to live a fulfilled life. That for me is what thriving is.
That's a great answer. Thank you. And what about you, Karen? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like, personally, I think that I need to be creative in order to survive. I think that both in terms of I think all of us need to find creative solutions to how we live. Mm. But also for my own sanity, I need to be creative. You know, that's part of surviving for me. And I think that thriving in the future specifically is also about not being your own limitation and being open to, I think people try often cling on to things because they're safe and they're comfortable and they know them and they understand them. I think that, for example, the mediums in which I work are going to be changing. Mm. And I need to embrace that and think of that as a really interesting and fun thing. And I do believe that, you know, all the others, they're still going to be there. They're just going to be different. Mm. And I think that's about going at its heart. What I do is storytelling. The medium might be different, but that's okay. That's not really relevant. You know, that's so having that constant curiosity. I heard such a fantastic conversation recently. We're talking about, you know, two of the most important things for creativity is curiosity.
Yeah.
And being willing to make mistakes and being willing to fail and figure stuff out and try again and keep going. And I think just keeping those attributes alive is how we're going to keep thriving in the future. You know, we can't project ourselves there. It's a daily choice about how do we show up.
That's so good. I think what I'm hearing there, which is great, is like we actually don't have a crystal ball, to go back to the, the beginning of the conversation. We actually don't know. There are ways that we can maybe make some educated guesses about what the future might look like. But I think cultivating the mindsets and the way that we think about life and about our creativity right now is what actually, like you say, storytelling might look different in the future, but the medium of it might look different, but the actual skill set is the same.
For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and creativity workshops also provide more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes and join our WhatsApp community. We'd love to welcome you.
So you will have heard at the end of some of our episodes that we ask you to like and subscribe. The reason that we're doing that is because we would love you to be part of our growing Creative Allies community. And by liking and subscribing, it shows that you firstly like us, which is good, right?
Very good. Very good. I like to be liked. I like liking other people too.
There we go. And it also means that any new episodes or any new snippets will download to your phone immediately. So go on and hit that subscribe button.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, everything.
So as part of every episode, we have a question from our Artist Alliance community. And let's just do a quick fire round from both of you. The question is, what current disruption is particularly exciting to you at the moment?
Please start with Karen.
Okay.
Let's start with Karen.
I'm loving the way that gaming and television are interacting with each other.
Okay.
And we're seeing people like Black Mirror, but other people play with the idea of how can we bring these forms together? How can people be more actively involved in the watching and impact on what they are watching?
Interesting. Very cool.
That's amazing. I was hoping that I'd find my answer while she was answering. I'm joking. I thought about this. I love how South Africa, especially obviously in my industry, the South African designers are taking their place in the rest of the world, designing to the level of international standard of what is required. And I like how the confidence of South African designers are now being pushed forward more and more often. Not even South African designers or in my fashion industry, but the sporting, a lot of other industries, film, TV, and how we are taking the stand. And it's really disrupting the rest of the world because they are realizing, oh, this is Africa? Is this Africa? Is this what we able, are they able to do that? Like it's because a lot of people internationally don't know what Africa is capable of.
So yes. I think that's that one huge narrative
disruption.
About,
exactly. Yeah. It's a huge disruption and it's really nice to see. And we are just taking this next level to, you know, another
just a next level, like thinking of innovation and transforming the industry, which is exactly what we are trying to do as a brand. But a lot of other designers are also starting to do that.
We're not, and it's wonderful
to see. And you shouldn't be like upset about what other designers are doing. We are all proudly South African. Exactly. Mm. So I feel like it's disrupting the industry. Like people are going, oh, wow. And that is so tremendously amazing for me to see. Yeah.
You know, there are so many surprising things that have come out of both of your lives. So imagine yourself back then. What advice do you think younger Karen or younger Erin would have loved to hear about the future? Mm. We'll start with
Yes,
Karen.
Well, as I say, mine is not really for me, because I think my issue with sitting with this question was, I'm quite a firm believer that like whatever did happen was the thing that needed to happen, because otherwise I wouldn't have been here now. And my reality when I was 19 is very different to the reality of someone who's 19 now. So I rather went, who's that 19-year-old now? And what would I say to them? I think that's just kind of where I kept my mind to it. And so here we go. Be unafraid. Make mistakes and take risks. Be afraid. Sit with that feeling and acknowledge it. Be tireless. Keep trying. Keep practicing. Keep doing. Be at rest. It's okay to do nothing. Be loud. Take up space. Make yourself heard. And be soft. Sometimes when you whisper, people strain to hear it. Be unexpected. Be a chameleon. Try different things. Be a writer, an artist, a musician, a designer. Be specifically you. Don't try to copy, imitate, or stay in a lane someone else has created for you. Mm. Be and do, and you are enough.
Wow. Be afraid. Jeez, I didn't write all of that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Be afraid.
That's all you, but in a positive way, because when
you stop being afraid,
then you don't care.
Yes, you become apathetic.
It's like you're kind of not in denial about. You actually feel your feelings, and you don't die, and it's actually going to be okay.
Absolutely, and I think if we create something, and we're not worried about how people are going to respond to it, then we haven't put enough of ourselves into it. Yes. That's what I believe.
It's so good.
Are you ready for me?
Yes, oh, we are ready.
It's not as long as Karen.
That's fine. Okay. This is not a competition.
No. You can tell Erin's very competitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'm fully competitive. No, but it's not about that. No, it's not about that at all. Like, so mine says, learn to listen. Know that the drive and determination you have now will serve you well in the future. Be patient. It's never going to be perfect, but you'll get pretty close one day. Don't take everything personally. The girls who couldn't stand you will be long forgotten once you focus on yourself and not worry so much about what others think. They don't understand your trajectory.
So good.
That is it.
Thank you so, so, so much for joining us on Creative Allies and sharing your insights, because there's a younger Karen coming. There's a younger Erin who, you know, is uncertain of the journey that they're taking, especially in this world that we live in. So for you to share this time and be generous with your advice is something we really, really appreciate. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Have a great day further.
If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to listen to our other episodes in this series. We speak with more inspiring guests about their career journeys and challenges and give you valuable and practical advice. Listen for tips on how to foster an entrepreneurial mindset, manage multiple income streams, and how to find a community of like-minded creatives. Please hit that subscribe button whenever you're listening to this. It helps us keep doing what we're doing. Maybe you'd even like to share this episode with a friend. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel or find out more about Artist Alliance on our website. Both links are in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Thanks for listening. We look forward to next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program created this series in partnership with Two Stories. Podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing and engineering by Rebecca Fonsale, and script writing by Linda Scarborough. The music for the series is composed by Jude Brown, and episodes are recorded at Sonic Nursery Sound Studios in Cape Town.